I'm going to talk to my doctor about the shingles vaccine immediately.
Welcome to Tunnel Talk, a No Facts, All Feelings wrestling podcast. I'm Allie.
I'm Ann.
And I'm Leah.
How's everyone doing this week?
I am two gins in, so great.
Hell yeah, baby.
We are all drinking.
We are. And the air quality, it rained a bunch this afternoon, so the air quality has gotten better than it was this morning. So that's pretty exciting, because I have not enjoyed breathing in garbage from Canada.
We had it yesterday, and we did get a bunch of rain afterwards, actually, which I had forgotten about, but I did get a pretty bad headache that I was like, this is absolutely because of the air quality.
It was bad yesterday, and I didn't know it was bad until late in the day, and so I'd had like the windows open all day, and I was like, why am I so crabby? And then I was like, because you feel terrible because you keep coughing because you're breathing in wildfire.
Great. Yeah.
It turns out it's not good to breathe that smoky air, and the rest of America knows it, and we know it too. It's bad. And despite having had that rough day, it is your week to give us a little happiness check and to tell us something that's been making you happy. Are you prepared to do so?
I am somewhat prepared. Yeah, so I have been rewatching The X-Files, which I was obsessed with as a teen, but have not watched for a long time. And it's very funny to revisit because it's like, it's horny as hell. Like, I can see why I was obsessed with it when I was 15 because, like, they want a bone real bad.
Amazing.
And there's a lot of, mutual respect, but also, like, every once in a while, Mulder will just be like, how are you doing? And, like, touch her face. And you're like, okay, you're at work. Like, what is happening?
That's so sexy.
It honestly is, but like, it's very funny to have watched it as like a high schooler and now to watch it as like an adult with a job, because I'm like, if one of my coworkers was ever like, oh, your dad just died, like, I'm gonna cup your face in my hands, I'd be like, good lord.
It is very funny to remember being a similar type of teen who would have watched that and just been like, that's what adult life is, I think.
Can't wait to get a job. It's going
to
be so sexy.
Can't wait to get a job and touch my coworkers' faces. But you know what? That's wrestling, actually.
That's wrestling, yeah. That's what they do.
Wrestling is just people who never grew up and thought you can't touch your coworkers' faces. They're like, no, you can. And you must.
They never did. Yeah. It's also very funny on The X-Files because, like, I had a high travel job for a while and you have to, like, submit your expenses all the time. So that's always on my mind now watching it. But they're always like, how can we stop Mulder from uncovering the truth? And it's like, well, you could just stop paying for his work trips. Like, I don't know. Doesn't seem that hard.
But that would be the most suspicious thing of all, is he starts submitting expense reports that are getting denied and they're like, you aren't supposed to go on that trip, we're not reimbursing those miles.
The fact that my taxpayer dollars were apparently going to investigating like the Loch Ness monster in like a lake in Wisconsin or whatever, like, I don't know if I'm on board with it, to be honest.
You would have denied Mulder those.
Deny those expense reports. Yeah.
I love the mental image of you working in the finance department and just being like, not. Absolutely not. No way in hell.
Are you kidding me? It's also funny because in the 90s, conspiracy theories were so much more charming, and they did a lot with like vaccine conspiracy theories, which are not funny anymore. That's a real bummer. But also at one point. No, go ahead.
No, you go.
Oh, I was just going to say, did I already tell you guys this? There's one point where they, like, go visit, like, Mulder has these, like little buddies who are, like, even crazier than he is, and they put out what I guess is just, like, a conspiracy theory zine or something. Like, they publish a newspaper. But so he, like, takes Scully to go see them, and they're like, oh, yeah, Mulder, like, we found out that this Russian dissident is being funded by, like, the most nefarious organization in the 20th century. And Mulder just makes, like, a joke. And then they're like, the CIA. And Scully, like, scoffs at it. And it's like,
it's
they
real,
not
though.
Know? I was like, that's not a conspiracy theory. Like, the CIA definitely would do that. Like, that's all they do.
they're constantly. The 20th century is littered with the acts of the CIA. Yeah. But I'm going to ask something really ignorant. What are the jobs of Mulder and Scully?
They're FBI agents that are assigned to the X-Files division, which are like unsolved, like mysterious cases. So sometimes the division, the X-Files will get like shut down, but then they get like reopened.
Oh, sure. Because I guess I was going to say, like, I guess maybe if I wanted to hide like mysterious crimes, I would like wouldn't have an X-Files division.
I mean, it seems like a fairly straightforward way to do it. Just be like, yeah, Mulder, go back to like working on the mob or whatever. Like, this is not.
Go back to Rhode Island, Mulder.
We're not funding this. Yeah. You probably like it. It's a very horror show. So
I've tried to watch it before, but not in a very serious way. Like I would like to watch it. But I did have that problem that everyone has brought up where it's like, it's so dark to watch with your eyes. Like, you're just like, I'm squinting. I can't see what is happening on the show. And that was the experience I had where I kept being like, what is going on here? So I wish they would remaster it for those of us who like kind of more bright poppy colors, just to keep our attention pretty much.
Well, I am putting together a list because like Leah and our friend Aaron were starting to watch it. And so I was like, of the good episodes, because there are some duds in there. So yeah, I'm putting together a little dossier.
I've also started it multiple times, and the problem is that I can't watch it alone because I actually am a huge baby and I kept getting scared. And I will watch it with Aaron, but we just tried to go from season one, episode one, and then just power through. And we both were like, oh, this.
Well, maybe what we need is. Yeah. That Anne is making her list, and whenever you feel ready, Anne, you say, okay, team, get in here. We are watching the good parts, and then the four of us can get into it, as we love to, because we're a watching team. We're currently on Lost. We haven't gotten into it in a minute, but how many seasons are there of Lost? Six?
Maybe seven.
And we're on four. Is that right?
That's true.
How are we on four? Little has happened on the show, actually. Let me put that out there.
We've been going pretty slow. Yeah. Because they're flashing back every 5 seconds, so you don't get any time passing.
Lost captured people's imaginations, but when you watch it back years later, and I'm having a blast. It's not a complaint. When you watch it back years later, you're like, there's not a lot of movement in this plot,
I actually fundamentally have a lot of pacing issues with Lost.
Oh, mostly. Yeah.
Like, when it's good, but the pacing is terrible.
Yeah.
Really bad.
It's interesting, though, because every episode, a million things happen that you're like, what the fuck? But they don't add up to the amount of movement narratively that you would expect from three seasons of a TV show.
No, you're kind of circling a drain. And you feel like there's movement because you're moving. But it's not. You're not getting any closer to that drain.
It's true.
Yes. That's Again, true. We love Lost. But
we're having a good time.
Having a great time.
Let's get lost in wrestling, shall we?
Wow. That's why you're the host. That's why you're the professional.
I've worked for 2 years at this. So that's pretty much the level that I'm at. And I would not say it's an amazing level for 2 years of work.
But I do remember our early episodes and being like, podcasting is a lot harder than it looks. And now it doesn't feel that hard.
No, it feels easy.
That hard. Yeah. So,
well, we can get into that later. Okay. Do you guys want to just quick check in? So we had a very busy week of wrestling. We didn't watch all of it, but
No, the moment where I realized that in Tony's perfect world, I watched 2 hours of wrestling on Wednesday, an hour of wrestling on Friday, 2 hours of wrestling on Saturday, and 4 to 6 hours of wrestling on Sunday. He's
Dream
out
the
of
fuck
his
on.
Fucking yeah. mind.
Dream and the fuck on.
He also thinks you should be watching ROH because stuff
oh
showed
God,
up that
right.
like, no one had any idea about. So like,
Jesus
wild.
Christ, right. Yeah. Well, it's not going to happen, Tony. Not for us. But we did watch
Rampage, though. So yeah. we were really.
All four of us watched Rampage, which I think has not happened in at least 6 months.
All four of us. Marjorie did not watch Rampage.
Yeah, Marjorie was not.
There is no way. But yes, we all watched. We all watched.
We did.
Rampage.
I don't think all of us have watched it live in months for sure.
No,
I think.
But
it's
this
been a really
it was
long
a good episode because we got to see our boys. They're not on the schedule. We got to see best friends, and we got to see. I thought that JB match was really fun. Actually,
yeah,
it was this week, right? Yeah,
yeah,
it was. Yeah.
Little hints of turning too. So yeah.
Why did we watch it live? Oh, it's because in our group chat, Anne and Nicole started talking, and Leah and I both cruised in to be like, okay.
I was like, Dustin, right. I was like, Dustin looks cute, and you were both like, oh.
I'm turning it on.
Yeah. I immediately hit stop on the Mentalist and was like, yeah, okay, sure.
Okay. Let's just do a quick check-in. So we had Rampage, then we didn't watch Collision, then we had Forbidden Door, which we did watch. Thoughts about, like, where were you at going into Forbidden Door? Any expectations that you had, or fears or hopes?
I wasn't feeling, like, super enthused, because I am not feeling that enthused about wrestling right now. But, but I had a good time, so.
I can't describe it, because I was like, well, I'm not enjoying wrestling right now. And also, like, the build for this has been crazy. But also, I said that about last year's Forbidden Door and had this time in my life. So I just kept being like, I think it's incredibly possible that I'm about to have a great time. Yeah. But I'm just not sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. I'm never sure at the beginning of a pay-per-view, to be honest, because there's a moment. I woke up on Sunday morning. I'm so, and it's like, when wrestling is fun and great, I love it. But I woke up on Sunday morning and kind of realized for the first time that that Forbidden Door was happening, and that meant I would be watching Forbidden Door that day. And I thought, oh, I don't know about that. But I ended up having a very good time, and the highs were incredibly high.
So high.
The highs were very high. So for me, it was ultimately a success. I don't even know that I thought it was a worse build than usual, but I agree that I didn't even get it together enough to get a snack situation going, guys.
Oh. I didn't
know what I ate. I don't know what I ate during that show.
I did have some chocolate ice cream. I was like, this is.
Oh, that's nice. I always make a huge thing of being like, before a pay-per-view, I go to the grocery store. Super Bowl. I go ape shit. Yeah. I come home with a bunch of weird shit that I never come home with, and that's going to be the thing. And it just snuck up on me.
Yeah.
Do you remember early on in this podcast how we used to like for the first ones I'd like put a bra on and like look nice and stuff, and now I have chocolate ice cream on the shirt right now is why I'm bringing it up. I like had some right before the podcast, and I was like reading the schedule and like giving Allie a little feedback on it, and had it on my stomach, and just the spoon, it all went all over, and I was just like, well, nah.
We're very comfortable with each other, and we're very comfortable with wrestling. We've been in a long relationship with wrestling and with each other. We don't put on bras. And it's okay to sometimes say to wrestling, like, oh, God, I have to watch you today? Oh, okay. All right. But then you have a good time with the stuff you have a good time with, and not with the stuff you don't. Because actually, I will say, I feel a lot less. I used to feel kind of guilty, like, I got to pay attention even to the stuff I don't really like. I got to kind of watch it to find out why it's good, if other people say it's good. But now if I don't like something, I'm like, oh, that's great. I'm doing something else for a while.
I know. And I used to like rewatch stuff before the podcast if I didn't like catch it at the time. And now I'm just like, well, I didn't really see it, but. You know,
well,
what?
If like, we don't remember, you feel it, like it's like a judgment at this point where it's like, oh, like I watch a lot of wrestling, and if you didn't grab me, then that's a judgment on you, babe.
Because there's many matches that I started not paying attention to and that I got very into. Yeah,
that's totally right. We know that we can be completely hooked by something that we didn't expect to be hooked by. So if you don't do it, that is its own, you know, issue. Okay, well, let's talk about what did hook us. So we are going to talk about the million and a half things that happened in the BCC Elite feud this week. Complimentary. So first, fucking crushed their pay-per-view match. Just an absolute banger that even the worst figures in the IWC could not say was not a banger.
Happy. I fucking love so much when Elite haters have to be like, yeah, of course it was a fucking good match. Of course it was one of the best matches of the night,
obviously.
Obviously it was great.
So funny. Eddie Mox were kind of the emotional center of, as I've written here, of the Mox, which feels right, but of the match, with a lot of the tension coming from Eddie's inability to fully commit to the Elite because he has these complicated feelings about Mox. So let's talk about, like, just like blanket, like what you liked about the match, what stood out to you going in?
Yeah, the Eddie Mock stuff to me was like so electric. It was one of those things when they got in the match and like when they started staring at each other and the crowd was just going crazy, which they also did for Hangman Kenny. And I like love it when the history between people is like so intense that it's like they just have to look at each other and people are like, I am going to lose
that's
my shit here.
The stuff. That's the, it's like, that is why it's worth it to tell stories, because it is an, it is a shortcut. Immediately the crowd is like, we're into this again. You could be cold for a year and then you look at the right guy with the right look in your eyes and the crowd is like, we're there, we're on board, we know exactly what's going on.
And it's like Eddie hasn't been on Dynamite or AEW in months and months, and before that he and Mox weren't even doing that much together. Like, that's intense.
Come on, so good. We also got, so Mox had his NJPW entrance music. I did think that entrance, did you guys watch the crowd video of little Shota, Mox's son, just like trying to, like, he's like patting people and like shaking hands in the crowd, and Mox just looks at him and is like, oh my god, we're not doing that, get over here, and just kisses his little head. So
I'm
sweet.
I'm obsessed with Shota. I think it's so funny that he is like just a little labradoodle and he's trying so hard to fit in with all the pit bulls, and he's just so sweet.
He can't, he's just a sweet Yuta, boy, you know? I know. Well, you, because Yuta really committed to being like, I'm going to be a bad boy. I'm going to be such a bad boy.
Every time he's a nice boy, he gets slapped. So he's really, he's come a long way. Really,
I was going to say, I guess it's true that like Shota is not getting like punished in the BDSM basement every time he's too sweet. So.
Yeah. Brian Danielson needs to take him hiking.
Yeah. That would take care of it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's going
to
put an
really
end to it.
It's really funny to think about Mox as the kind parent, where it's like, Mox is not being bad cop. Brian Danielson and his bad cop.
Yeah. In the scrum, after, where I was watching some of Brian Danielson's, and it was really funny because he was being like really nice to the press and really personable and stuff, but then he was like, oh yeah, Yuta, he got the pin, I'm gonna slap him about that later. Just like, great.
Again, I say, at some point maybe the storyline will be abuse is bad. We will find out if that is true in time. There was a moment in the match where, so Mox was not scared to hit Eddie. Like, his vibe clearly was like, well, we're in a match, so you're getting hit. But the Bucks tried to super kick Mox, and Eddie jumped in, pushed Mox out of the way, and took the super kick, which was just like, whoa, this is sexy.
It was so sexy. I couldn't even handle it. Yeah. When people get unbalanced and they do things against their own interests and their team's interests because of their deep love for their ex-husband, I mean, that's where drama is.
We should circle back on that later when we talk about how they're using the tag team tournament. It just occurred to me that we should come back to that. Okay. Oh, just any other overall thoughts on the like Elite BCC dynamics or the match in general, and then if not, we can move on to what happened on Dynamite this week.
I do just want to call out how embarrassing the eyebrow shaving is, and how funny, you know, so funny. The level to which the Elite are like, Eddie, we're just like you, we have our eyebrows shaved, and he was just looking into the camera being like, they're so fucking stupid.
Yeah, but then he helped them do it. It was very funny that Matt Jackson also then went home and was like, fuck it, I'll do the other one. I'm gonna do both of them. I think I look cool.
It was so funny on BTE where he was like, I fucked it up, I did, it's too thick, the line's too thick, I look stupid, and he was like, let me do it on the other eyes, and then I'll turn my face and it'll be fine.
So I was obsessed with Matt at the end of this match when the Elite and Eddie were leaving, and Eddie was in a fucking pissy mood because he clearly was like, I did not want to be fighting Mox, and I'm mad about his behavior, my behavior, everyone's behavior. And Matt Jackson just kept leaning down to try and talk to him, and I was like, it's mom behavior. It's just like, he's just like, honey, are you sure you don't want to talk about it right now?
And
like Eddie's like, I don't want to fucking talk about it. Oh,
right,
you sure
it is not good mom behavior, because like, it's like, we've all been that person.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You need to walk away from me. You need to like, calm down. And your mom just keeps being like, but hold on.
Why won't
like,
you talk to me?
But you're so mad. And I just want to talk to you. And you're like, you can't.
Can't we?
You just need to leave me alone.
Right. It's just like, you gotta let him go to his room. You gotta let him blast Metallica. You gotta let him get his feelings out. Later he'll want to talk about it. Maybe he won't. No, Matt can't. Matt is just
Matt,
like, we gotta talk about this now.
Yeah,
we gotta talk
Matt
about
mom
this now.
Says, let's get in the minivan. We're gonna talk.
We're gonna unpack. We've got a 1 hour drive. We gotta unpack this.
Back to Rancho Cucamonga.
Imagining Eddie in Rancho Cucamonga.
I want to see it. Maybe on BTE someday. Okay, what so then guys, this...
Oh, I was just going to say, what did you guys think of the ending of this with, I think, Ishii pinned Yuta? I kind of felt like it was a little bit, like, Eddie Mox was, like, so powerful to me that I was a little bit like, oh, these other guys are here. Like, I don't know.
The only reason I liked it is because the entire internet kept saying that Ishii is the Chuck Taylor where, like, he just gets pinned all the time. And, like, that's what he's there for in every single match is he gets pinned. And so, like, there was a certain segment of the internet that was like, holy fuck, he got the pin! You let Ishii get the pin! And so when I read that, I was like, nice. Yeah, I like that.
I do like that literally any time... We love to identify factions who gets the pin and be like, that's their Dustin. That's their sweet Dustin. And it's so amazing that like our child is just like everybody else. Like there's so many other people out there who always take the pin. It's not just our boy. Every faction has someone who takes the pin. It's okay. It's not shameful.
Dustin has not taken the pin for four matches in a row.
I know. Well, maybe he spoke up and said, guys, they keep talking about me on this stupid podcast. They keep talking about how I take the pin every
I'm so proud of him.
You know, making
Rocky take the pin.
You know what makes me crack up is that in America, Matt Jackson always takes the pin, but in Japan, it was always Nick. Because
he's the younger brother.
Yeah, that the Japanese audiences are like, the younger brother should take it.
That is very funny. And I love when Matt takes the pin, though. It's so funny. Okay. On Dynamite this week, we got multiple follow-ups for both the BCC and the Elite on this feud. So Mox fought Ishii, and Eddie came out to watch the match ringside. And Mox won. On his way out of the ring, he slammed his shoulder into Eddie, like, as he was passing him, and said something that I don't remember. He said something about, like, I didn't need any help or something that, like, for me, I wasn't quite sure what Eddie's intention had been coming out. But this got them in a bit of a fight, a bit of a marital dispute that carried into a backstage promo with Renee, where Renee basically was like, Mox, what the fuck is going on with you? And then Eddie came into the promo, and then it was very funny, the rest of the BCC is just kind of back there. Eddie, Mox, and Renee are having a full, like, married situation where she's like breaking them up and being like, you guys need to work out your issues, and Eddie and Mox are screaming at each other. And then Mox stormed off, and Renee slapped Eddie's chest and said, you need to fix this.
I loved it. Because, like, I thought comparing it to, like, the Hangman stuff where she was also interviewing Hangman, but she did it much more objectively where she was just sort of like,
yeah.
And it's crazy that you're having sex with my husband in front of us. That's crazy.
But, like, yeah. But it seems like you both need it.
Right. She didn't seem moved to be involved in any way. She was just like, yeah. No. That's what you guys are up to. But for this, for her to be like, no, absolutely not. It is like a level to which she's like, the two of you, I'm not going to have this in my bed.
I know. It was really fun to see her, like, getting so riled up and, like, yelling at Mox. And it was like, oh, yeah, you've got a personal relationship now, which you'd been kind of trying to avoid. But, like, she did a really good job being, like, very believable, too, which I was, like, I didn't know Renee could do it. I was impressed.
I totally loved it. And I loved just her vibe of, like, you're both making each other very unhappy for no fucking reason. Like, this is so stupid. And she did have that great, just kind of like, men are so fucking dumb. And it's, like, so true, Renee. Yeah. Emotional, they haven't been taught by society how to deal with their emotions.
And Mox was saying to Eddie, who cares about this Chikara shit from 10 years ago?
And then we went right into the 2.0 match, which was great.
Yeah, delightful. So I fun. Know. And Mox was also saying again to Eddie, like, that every time thing. And it's just like this is,
it's like, you know,
history.
When you love someone, but they have behaviors that you can't, that they can't change, and you can't figure out how to accommodate.
Yeah,
I'm also obsessed with it because, like, I think if I watched ROH, maybe, like, it would be different. But if you only watch AEW, Claudio hasn't done shit.
No. It's just been really nice.
Stands there, right? Like, when Eddie is, like, losing his shit, Claudio just stands there being like, what's good? You know what I mean? Like, he just doesn't. So, like, it just seems like Eddie is hell-bent on destroying this man who has done nothing, and Mox, and then he's mad at Mox because Mox doesn't think he should be allowed to do that, and that's, like, incredibly funny.
I will say, though, that Claudio during the Mox match Eddie and Claudio kept staring at each other. And
they
Claudio
were watching each other back.
They were watching each other. And Claudio had... No, everything you said is right. This is just another... Claudio was doing this face acting where for the first time, I was like, oh... You mean underneath. Like, it was the first time that he was doing a thing where I was like, it was like on a CW show where it's just like, oh, he's fucking playing you, Mox. Like, he's not a good guy. Like, he is going to start shit. So I would love it if they've leaned into that. And because, especially because Eddie's such a fucking baby face. It's like, if they leaned into Claudio eventually being like, I am an evil Swiss mastermind.
He was kind of standing behind Mox. He was kind of standing behind Mox, like, looking smug while Eddie was, they were screaming at each other too, which is like a very good vibe of just like, yeah, I'm not doing anything.
I hope they keep going down that road.
Yeah.
The only thing, it would be incredibly funny. I know that like Ortiz and Eddie like fell out, but it would be so funny to do like a segment where like Claudio beats the shit out of Ortiz backstage. And then when Eddie like calls him out about it, Claudio's like, that didn't happen, Mox. I don't know what he's
talking
about. Oh my
God.
Just,
that,
like,
yes.
Gaslighting him.
Yes. Gaslighting segment.
That'd be amazing.
I love that. Okay. So then on the Elite side, Hung Bucks got a backstage promo in which I think they were being like, we'll accept all comers for a match for tonight for Dynamite. And Dark Order took them up on the offer. Hangman didn't understand that that's what was being suggested, which was very funny. Like, he was just like, you guys want to fight with us? Like, you want a 12
man? We'll do a six man. I mean, we can find six other guys.
He was like, that can get really out of control, but sure, yeah. But so then in the match, he was really reluctant to get involved in the fight until Uno baited him into it, and he ended up buckshot lariating John Silver for the win. He was immediately like really clearly like, oh fuck, I wish it hadn't gone that way. Even the Bucks, it was very funny to have everyone still in the ring just like not fighting again, but the Bucks just being like, well, he's really not happy about this, and like, we don't care that much about Dark Order, to be honest. Like, what are we supposed to do here? But they didn't have to deal with it because BCC stormed the ring, attacked the Elite. Dark Order left, fully abandoned them. Like, there was a real moment where they were like, should we help? No, we're not gonna fucking help. So they left. Eddie ran out and did get involved, and then I didn't see this, but this is what Manolo said. He said Moxley turned his back so he didn't have to watch Eddie get beat up.
He did it incredibly. Like, he hung his elbows over the rope and was just hanging over, staring at the crowd, keeping his back. Well, I believe Claudio had like
screwdriver.
Was it a leg? No, he had something.
It was in the
chair. Yeah,
he was
about. I think it was his leg, and he was about to break Eddie's leg off.
Mm-hmm. The stuff Mox and Eddie are doing is like so horny. It's just out of control.
Oh my God, that make me crazy. That making me crazy.
Yeah.
Any overall thoughts on kind of like the narrative function of this map? This match, like kind of what it did for some of the storylines we're working with here. And we've got a lot of storylines we're working with.
So many. Mwah, beautiful. We talked about last week about how easy it would have been for this to follow the exact same beats as BCC versus JAS.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that like they're just like blowing that out of the water, you know, like I think Dark Order added a twist to this that like nobody saw coming. Like, I didn't, like, I'm a BTE watcher and I never expected this to pay off on Dynamite.
No. Well, because they've dropped it for so long. Yeah.
Well, I definitely thought that like the addition to the Dark Order, the Dark Order's addition to this just completely like made it so much richer and deeper. And like, even them just like walking away, like backing down the ramp, staring at Hangman bleeding and keep walking. Hello?
I know.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. When Hangman is being emotionally tortured, that's what I like
to
see.
That's what I like. That's what girls like to see.
And
that's,
you know,
what
in the
girls want.
In that finals of that trios tournament at All Out 2022, Hangman was teamed up with Alex and John, and he accidentally buckshot lariated John Silver instead of one of the Bucks or whatever, and that's how they lost the match. So the fact that he lariated him this time.
On purpose. On purpose.
And the Bucks, like, him. The Bucks held John Silver for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was like, this is the point where you do it.
It was so great for me, too, though, that the Bucks didn't have a malicious vibe about it. Like, afterwards, they were just kind of like, yeah, I mean, like, you got to settle this somehow, man. And it's just like, you're all fucking emotionally incompetent. Two things that I want to say. Like, one, someone pointed out, and I can't remember who in my travels around the internet, but someone pointed out, like, that One of the things that this did is you want to be clear that, like, when Hangman needs help, the Dark Order isn't going to come again. Yeah. Or if they do mm-hmm. come, it would be really meaningful. And I was like, that's so true. Like, is that because they've already done that in this feud really successfully to be like, who is going to come help this person? But B, I'm now really distracted because I'm just imagining a version of What Women Want where Mel Gibson is surrounded by female wrestling fans. that all the desires that he is discovering with his new mind reading skill, it's female wrestling desires.
To be honest, learn a lot. Want that to happen to Tony, where Tony
oh my
is
God.
Just like,
oh my
God, should I pay attention to the women's section?
Please.
They think I'm sexist?
God. Huh. What Women Want, Tony. What Women Want, Tony Khan 2023. what did you guys think about Hangman not wanting to fight Dark Order? Did you like that? Did you not like it? Did you not have any feelings about it?
I think it's really interesting that, like, I think the Bucks are just bad friends, right? Like, they totally. Want to be good friends, but they're bad friends. And they're ultimately mm-hmm. not that repentant about it. I think Hangman is a bad friend who hates the fact that he's a bad friend. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. he wants to be a good friend, but he just, like... He has a war inside himself, and like
yeah.
he struggles to be the man he wants to be, and he fails over and over, and that's what makes him relatable. That what makes him interesting, and I mm-hmm. just like that he didn't refuse to fight the Dark Order. You know what I mean? He half-assed mm-hmm. it, where like he mm-hmm. got in the ring with the Dark Order and he started it, but he was just conflicted about it. But at some point, he could have put his foot down and said, "No, I'm not doing this." This makes yeah. me sad. But he didn't do that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. The fact that he is never fully, like, taking a stand enough. Like, he has to be pushed to a far point to put, like, say this
yeah.
enough. And he did yeah. that with Kenny. He did that with the Bucks. Like, he has to be pushed into making a decision, which is a really interesting thing for a character.
Yeah. And
It's interesting, too, just because he clearly hadn't noticed that he wasn't being a good friend to the Dark Order. Like, he thought they were cool and wanted to fight with him, you know? So, like, he hadn't processed,
yeah.
I think, because he's been so caught up with the Elite. He hadn't noticed that he was neglecting them, you know, which I think, like, you know, is very, probably both, we've all been on both sides of that a little bit, you know? So.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, it's like, I'm not trying to take myself to therapy on our podcast, but I find Hangman very relatable. In that, like, he's a character who never wants to ask for help. Like, he never wants to say, like, I need you. And clearly, like, a lot of his character arc has been, like, this man is at the bottom of a well. And he's just like, and I'll just be here because there's nothing I could do about it. And then when people pull him, like, help pull him out of that well. Like, that's what the Dark Order did, right? Like, they helped him, like, come back. They like, kind of gave him... some structure to his life and this feeling of friendship that he actually did really need. And then, but then there's this scary part after that where, like, they're like, okay, and now we depend on you. And now you, like, mean something to us. And I, as Hangman, I'm like, but I never asked for the help. I was willing to stay at the bottom of the well. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to ask anyone to pull me out of the well. And it's so... like terrifying and suddenly like repulsive actually mm-hmm. to be like, and now you need something from me,
yeah.
but I didn't ask for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
I, and it's really like Hangman is a great character where I watch that and I'm like, yeah, it's complicated. I don't think that in my life, I've always been in the right in situations like that. Like, because like life is about like people love you, whether you ask them to or not. And then you do owe them something if you love them too.
Yeah.
Like it, mm-hmm. but it's not an easy answer and you can't just fix your brain all of a sudden to be like, okay, and now I'm fine with that. I'm fine with the idea that you helped me and now I owe you.
Yeah. I agree. Just, he's so relatable. I've been in that situation a million times where you're like, I'm going to disappoint this person and it sucks.
I feel really sad. I feel like I'm going to cry a little bit. Like I'm like really emotionally moved actually. Oh man. Do you guys have anything else that you want to say about the whole Elite BCC thing before we move on?
It was just so exciting to have them like pick up all these storylines that they had that have been on the back burner. Like, I think wrestling like is pretty bad about keeping things like paced well or like moving week to week. Mm-hmm. So it's always when you think they're done with something and they get it back, it's very fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think we all listened to the One Nation radio podcast this week where like a bunch of those guys were talking about a story that they had heard. Multiple of them had heard that that Nick Jackson is a virtuoso at planning
out matches.
And that's all I could think about when we were watching this, just being like, and he planned out a match where so many things happened.
It's very funny. I do keep thinking about just how electrified we were like that and being like, those men, lovely as they are, had no idea who they were going to electrify.
I know. They probably just thought that they were saying like an off-the-cuff interesting thing, but instead it preoccupied my mind.
We all lose our minds and we're just like, it's so true and nobody's talking about it, that it's like everyone involved in the BCC Elite feud is like, we want to tell stories stories. There is always going to be narrative happening in our matches. Like, you are always going to be thinking about how these different personalities are interacting and how, like, you know, you can have great chemistry with someone and chemistry is also really combustible. So thank you to One Nation Radio for talking to us about Nick Jackson, virtuoso agent, one of the best agents in the biz. Okay. So elsewhere in the Elite, Kenny had his match against Will Ospreay at the pay-per-view. This was the third to last match in the night. And we'll kind of get into that match order as we talk through some of this. But this match was fucking insane, right?
So
this
crazy.
Match was crazy.
It was
out
wild.
Of control. The amount of blood these guys bled, like when Mox didn't even bleed any, it was
and
not
it's like
expected.
Something beyond that too, where I'm just like, I am too stupid about how wrestling works to explain why. Like, I guess it's just like, obviously these are two athletes who are at the absolute like top of their field, but it was an absolutely riveting match. Mm-hmm. Just like every minute.
I think it's something to do with the intensity of like when two people, because like Hangman and Mox have also done this where you're just like, oh, these are two people that like cannot wait to get their hands. Mm-hmm. Like that, you just picture them backstage in little bullpens, like pacing and like scratching at the desperate to be
let them
out
at each other.
Yeah, right. And then they get to do their little entrances, but like the whole time they're just like, I just need to fucking kill him. And that's what I felt like came off this match, is that whatever happened to them in January, it did not satisfy them, and it's been building all this time, and they were just like exploded out of them.
And this week on Dynamite, we got the little package where both of them were basically being like, and this didn't satisfy us either. We'll go again. We'd love to go again. I think Mox said, or not Mox, Kenny said, like, this isn't over. And Will said, if you want to fight me again, I know a place. So obviously the talk has been like, is that going to be all in? And it's like, it's fucking got to be, right? It's like, what the fuck? Obviously.
But doing it again that soon, though, is like, are you guys going to be okay? Am I going to be okay? Like, their bodies, are they okay?
I don't know. I just can't imagine. Because it is like, this was the kind of match that, like, as an idiot, you watch it and you're just like, oh, fuck, wrestling is great. I forgot. Wrestling is the fucking best.
I think that is what happened over, like, the Forbidden Door to last night's Dynamite transition. Is I was like, oh, yeah, I fucking do love wrestling.
Yeah.
Because I really needed that, because I've been in such a dark place where, like, even the stuff I enjoyed, I kind of, like, had to will myself to enjoy it. But, like,
yeah.
The past week of wrestling, girls, I've had quite some time.
was
and
the good stuff. Yeah.
You will say, it's like Kenny does, like, Kenny always brings that intensity.
Yeah.
Just so, so good to watch. Feels amazing to watch.
Yeah. It does make me wish I understood more about, like, how matches are structured and stuff, because I just watch it. I'm like, I don't understand why this is so much better than other stuff, but it's like I'm... can't take my eyes away.
And I know that's the kind of thing that people are saying that Nick is really good at, like, and I'm sure that Kenny is good at too, but like, and that Matt is good at. They're all good at it, but like all my beautiful boys are good at it. But that there's something about, it's like the way that the moves are like flowing into each other, and the way mm-hmm. that you're like doing ebbs and flows of intensity. I'm like, if you're good at agenting a wrestling match, clearly like it comes naturally to you, or you've learned it the same way that we would say like writing comes naturally, where you're just like, I understand what a plot should look like. I understand that there have to be moments that feel like really tense, and then you come back a little, and then you go higher, and then you come back a little. They clearly know how to do that with the physical wrestling moves in a way that I agree I don't understand, but when you see it done right, you're like, yeah, this is it.
I do always, like, once I wrote like a creative writing story and someone said like, wow, I felt so many emotions doing this. How did you do it? And I remember feeling very baffled, because it's like, well, you can see all the words, like it wasn't a magic trick, like but I think about that every time I watch like a Kenny match or Brian Danielson match that really gets me, and I don't understand why I'm so into it. I'm like, how did you do it?
I know.
Emotions.
And the thing is that like when people talk to wrestlers, like you know, like Kenny or anybody else, and they try to talk to them about wrestling, it gets down to like moves, like like why did you like this one move? And I'm like, I would love for like someone who's really into like classical music or writing or like anything mm-hmm. to ask those kind of questions, because like I really do feel like it's something where it's like you really starts to like sense it in your mind, where you're like, oh no, this needs this here. Like I would love to hear somebody who's very creative mm-hmm. question a wrestler about like how to plan a match, because I feel like that could be really interesting.
Well, and to ask the kind of questions that are like, what? Well, because you've seen, we talked about this recently, because I rewatched it after listening to that One Nation Radio. I watched that Rolling Stones clip where you watch the Bucks like plan a match really last minute, like they're about to go on and they're just being like, this is what we're going to do. And then you watch them in the aftermath talking about how it went over. And it is quite a funny clip, because Matt is like, that went amazing. And Nick is like, dead crowd. That usually I'd have him in the palm of my hand with that, like dead crowd. And Matt's like, whatever. Honestly went great. But like you do want to like be able to ask them like what impact, not like no details, no technical details about this move, but what impact is this move going to have on the crowd? Like why are you choosing it? Like what are you trying to do to the crowd in this moment? And then what are you trying to do next? And then like how are you trying to play the crowd over the course of this match? Whatever they did in this one, they really played the crowd, and it was crazy to watch.
So
and
it's so annoying to me that all the people who interview wrestlers are just fucking move nerds. Like it just got so angry just thinking about like the people who get like long, like hour, 2 hour long interviews are fucking Meltzer. You know what I mean?
Where he never like, asked about narrative.
In 1994, you. I thought it was so funny when Will Washington got hired and Dave Meltzer was like, well, I kind of wish they'd hired more of a wrestling historian. And it was one of those things where it's like, well, you're kind of just a wrestling historian, so that's why you think it's important. So.
Oh, God. It's like, that's not what they need, because it's like Tony's a wrestling historian. Like, Tony is obsessed with the wrestling of the past. Like, we need someone who's thinking about this stuff that we like. But do you guys have any...
We need a woman in creative.
We need a woman. I did not love that. What was the press conference like right before Forbidden Door where someone was like, who are there women involved in creative? And Tony Khan names like two people. And then it's just like, and of course I'm always talking to Pat Buck. And it's just like a man, though. So we don't have to bring it up, because the question really wasn't about whether you're talking to Pat Buck, which we all know you are. So didn't really have to come into it at all. Anything you want to call out from the match itself that was particularly insane, erotic, or electrifying?
That Tiger Driver was bananas looking, but then the discourse around it was insufferable. But
it was insufferable on both sides, to be clear.
It really was. Yeah, really.
No one was doing a good job of talking about it. And I don't, also, it's very funny to be someone who's just like, I don't really know who to believe. Because I saw a couple days afterwards, someone on Twitter posted a different angle picture of it and was just like, here you can see the way that he's taking the move on his shoulder. Mm-hmm. And that it's like, this is why these guys are the best in the world, because of course it looked dangerous from that angle, but from this angle you can see it's not. And I'm like, I can't see anything. I couldn't see anything the first time, and I can't see anything this time. I have no idea what is true. I know that according to all reports and from the 1 second of BTE footage, Kenny seems okay. And I love that. I love that. Yeah, he seems safe. That's, I have great, no further expertise that I can bring to the table. No, here.
Well, it was one of those things where you said to me, I'm worried. People on Twitter are making me crazy because they're worried about Kenny's neck. And immediately in that moment, I was like, oh, there was a move that made me scared. And mm-hmm. It turned out it was that move, but that the entire fucking internet was scared about. But it was so funny because there's the two sides where it's like, there's one side being like, AEW is dangerous. Everybody's getting hurt every minute. They shouldn't allow people to do that. Everybody's going to die. This is a full nightmare. And then the other side is like, if they want to kill themselves, that's fine. You have no right to interfere.
Let them die.
Let them die. And you're like, I don't agree with either of you.
I know. I feel like the thing is, seeing that scared everybody, which it scared me too when I saw it. But then it means a lot of people reflexively were like, you shouldn't do this because it scared me. But the thing is, half the time they get injured, Bryan Danielson breaks his arm on an elbow drop or something really normal. Or Hangman gets knocked out on just a normal clothesline. So it's like, are we all just trying to pretend that we don't watch men doing really dangerous things and destroying their bodies every week and then be like, how dare you scare me about it? I'm in denial about what I'm enjoying.
Yeah.
I mean, and it is interesting because I'm like, I'm scared every week. Almost every week I have a moment where suddenly I'm like, this is live TV. It's happening right now. And I think someone could die. This week when we watched Sting do that jump, as it was happening, I was like, I'm going to watch Sting die. And immediately afterwards, I was like, Sting is dead.
Yeah. Well, there are those moments where that stuff happens when I'm like, it is not morally defensible that I enjoy watching this.
I know. But that also is sometimes when I get in that mode of the people you're talking about, Leah, where I'm just like, well, but if they're desperate to do it,
they wouldn't be happy if they weren't throwing themselves.
I know. I'm like,
ladders,
look at them. So. They need it. They can't live without it. So whatever. We don't have the answer, but we know that we loved watching the match. I personally loved watching. I've never seen blood licking like the blood licking that Will Ospreay did, where he licked Kenny's blood off his wrist like he was doing a tequila shot, and then just stood there savoring the taste, and everyone
looking
crowd
in the camera
was chanting "you sick fuck," and I was like, we're beyond that. We are completely beyond "you sick fuck." This man is having a euphoric experience, religious experience about the taste of Kenny Omega's blood, because Kenny Omega is someone that he idolizes. He is a kind of a father figure. So
at that moment, my friend Jeff messaged me and he was like, so did you guys enjoy that blood licking? I was like, okay, yeah. We did.
Of course
you
did.
Look, Jeff, yes, we did enjoy it.
Of course we were all riveted. Of course we all went to bed thinking about it.
It got a reaction.
The boundaries of human experience. Yeah, we loved it.
It made an imprint on my psyche, Jeff.
Yes, I'll never forget it, Jeff. Thank you, Jeff. We love you. Okay. Any other thoughts about this before we move on to our next topic? Okay. So as I said, this was the third to last match. So we had this, and then we had Adult Lover Sting and Jericho, which I would say was clearly had been scheduled as a breather match. Yeah, and we'll talk about it later if we get to it. But we all were like, no hate to Sting and Jericho. But of course, I'm literally just lying here panting, trying to get my breath back. And then the actual main event of the pay-per-view was Bryan Danielson versus Okada, and they were fighting over which of them is the best wrestler in the world. So this was about a 20-minute match, I think. Danielson pinned Okada in a slightly anticlimactic finish. I think we all were kind of that seems a little weird. And it made more sense when we found out at the scrum later that Danielson had broken his arm 10 minutes into this match. So he wrestled for 10 minutes, a normal match, broke his full arm, wrestled another 10 minutes, and pinned Okada.
Yeah. He broke it bad, too. His wife posted the x-ray, and it was
Yeah, fully broke all the way broke. Like sliding all the way broke. Off.
Yeah,
not
you know,
in line.
Literally, right. Probably you know a how miracle sometimes... the bone didn't come through.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know how sometimes you look at an x-ray and you're like, oh, is that line the fracture? Is that where that is? Yeah. That was not that situation. No. I was like, oh.
Yeah, that's broken.
Super that man broken. That man is going to have to go to the L.A. injection dojo or wherever Kenny and Matt were hanging out with the beautiful nurses.
Get some stem cells.
He's
going
to have to
there.
Get those stem cells in there. So I want to talk to you guys about this. Lots of people have talked about this, but for me and for a lot of people, it was basically impossible to come back from that Omega Osprey match.
Yeah, our friend Sarah and Trish were in the crowd for that, and they said mm-hmm. that the crowd was absolutely like just laid out, like nobody had anything left to give.
Which you could tell, I mean, and you could tell that they wanted to be able to give something. It wasn't like they were like, we don't want to watch this.
They were chanting, this is awesome, before they started wrestling, like when they were just looking at each other. Yeah.
Yeah. They really wanted to be in it, but I have rarely been so sapped of energy as I was by that Omega Osprey, where it was just like, I'm out. I can't come back.
I was actually really excited for this match because Daniels has gotten me so many times at these midnight matches when I'm like mm-hmm. flagging and then it's like really great. So I was really excited at the start. And I think I probably like Danielson's wrestling a little more than you guys do anyway.
I love his wrestling, but I go on.
Yeah, but it was just like, it was just not like his best main event match, probably because he broke his arm halfway through the match. So it like didn't, like he's pretty good at usually getting like the tension really ramped up so that it like really gets me. But this was just like, you know, it was fine. It wasn't bad. It was just, yeah, especially after that Omega Osprey, it was just hard to get into it.
Yeah, I'm very interested in what the match that they had planned was going to look like, because I do agree that, like, in a perfect world, I think that Danielson could have had a slow 10 minutes and then, like, absolutely, like, brought us to a climax that we all would have enjoyed, but it couldn't do it. Because, again, he broke his arm in half.
Broke his full arm.
I'd like to take us away for a moment from the kind of technical wrestling discussion. Brian Danielson, so Tony Khan bought for Brian Danielson as a gift of love the Final Countdown, his ROH theme song that played as he came out. Yeah. And we saw the crowd went crazy. Many people online mm-hmm. in the IWC went crazy and were like, this is a historic moment, like so many feelings.
When they heard it, they said, wow, I'm ready to see a fight.
I'm ready
a
to
real
see fight.
Fight. Something serious and intense. But something that is not a comedic.
In our
song.
Group chat, what we said is, it's not a trick, Michael. It's an illusion.
A trick is something a whore does for money.
The fact that we paid that attention, that match any attention, is wild. Because immediately, the moment that music hit, we were like, we're in a comedy zone. We are in a comedy zone.
Full comedy zone.
And in the kind of comedy zone where none of us could really, I think we still haven't really been able to process the idea that anybody hears the Final Countdown and thinks, this is serious, instead of I'm watching Arrested Development.
It's crazy. It just like goes to show you that the internet wrestling community, they watch wrestling. End of list. Yeah.
You're not watching TV. And it is so, it's just so funny where it's like, actually Ryan Anderson would be maybe great on Arrested Development.
Honestly, he would
see that for him.
Wow. Yeah, he'd be great on it. I was trying to Google to be like, when did he first use it in ROH? Because I was like, was it before or after Arrested Development?
It's a reference.
And I couldn't pin it down. Yeah.
When did Arrested Development come out for the first time?
Like 2002, 2003-ish.
That shocks me. I would have said
earlier or later.
Wow. Yeah, I would have said later.
It first aired
after I was in college, but
It started airing at the end of 2003. Yeah,
that is absolutely astonishing to me. That show has had so many different moments in its life, but incomparable.
Classic
in
show.
Its own way. Incomparable in its own way.
I want that to be my eulogy when I die. This woman has had so many moments in her life.
Incomparable in her own way.
Lee, I'm coming to your funeral and I'm playing the Final Countdown from the audience. I'm not getting it Your mother is not saying okay. No one is saying I can do it. I'm holding it up like I'm in the Breakfast Club, my phone. No, I'm thinking of the other one with the boombox. John Cusack. It's the final countdown.
I love that you're picturing like Leah's mother's going to be there. So Leah's funeral is not like way in the future. It's kind of coming up.
Yeah, no, it's I'm going to die young, and I'm going to die bizarrely.
I'm so sorry. It really didn't occur to me.
She's right. No, she's right. I'm going to die young.
You are not dying young. Leah, look me in my eyes. I will not let you die young.
Hold on. I want to die in a way that makes a supermarket tabloid.
No, Leah, like, no.
Woman, do they still have woman gets attacked by Bigfoot. You know what I mean? Like, that is what I'm looking for.
And if they don't have those tabloids, you want us to make maybe like a little zine about you. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm not going to let you die young. Okay. We're going to die old.
If you do, we'll play Final Countdown at the funeral and we'll make a zine about it.
Even if you die old, I'll play the Final Countdown. Your mother just might not be there.
What if you die first though, Allie? Who are you going to deputize?
Oh, you, Ian?
Okay, sure.
Yeah. Should we have like, should I'll we, live like, all
make,
of you.
Do we Listen. Need like a telephone tree of our friends to figure out who's going to play what at whose funeral depending on who dies first?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that seems like a good use of our time. That honestly seems like a pretty normal way that we might spend a Monday in the group
that
chat.
That honestly could really blow through a Tuesday afternoon that I would enjoy.
Joe's going to keep us busy.
Don't you think if I rock up Monday morning and say, hey, which one of us do you think is going to be the Betty White? Like, it was like really open to discussion.
Oh, yeah. Robust discussion, for
I think
sure.
I think it's going to bring everybody out of the woodwork.
Yeah. And I think we could come to a consensus like we did about who we thought would win Survivor if we were all
so
on
true.
It.
So true.
Did we say true. Aaron?
Aaron. Yeah. Aaron.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's good that I knew that.
Loves to lie.
Loves to lie. She's very athletic and she loves to lie.
Okay. Do you guys have anything else you want to say about Okada Ospreay? Nope. Okada Danielson.
Where are we? What's happening?
That is how I feel, but I'm deep in my cups, so.
Yeah.
I feel like, I don't know, I just, like, I don't want to be disrespectful to it, because I keep being like, I didn't watch it, and I don't think it was fun, but it's not anybody's fault.
It's nobody's fault. I don't think it's anybody's fault. Do you want to talk about, I think the thing we both heard from One Nation Radio that we were like,
we gotta start watching that, listening to that podcast regularly.
Yeah, it was a good podcast.
Both of us loved it.
Shout out.
Good time.
I think, yeah, but there was, you listened to it too.
Yeah.
Yes. There was a moment where, like, he was like, somebody was like, I don't understand why Ospreay, Kenny did main event. And someone else was like, because AEW was never going to let, it was always planned that Kenny was going to lose the belt to Ospreay, but that's not how they wanted to end Forbidden Door. They had to end it on an AEW wrestler winning. And immediately it was like, oh, of course that's why. But then it's like also like, well, they shouldn't have done, like, they should have just taken the
it does
risk. Because like it's,
but I think like, I don't know, I saw a lot of people being like, it was disrespectful to Kenny basically to not have a main event. And I'm like, but on paper it's not crazy, because like Danielson has like a lot of good and everybody obviously thought those were like the two big
matches.
I
don't think it was disrespectful to Kenny. I think it did do a disservice to Danielson Okada, where it's just like, and I don't know, like, maybe it's not fair to be like they weren't gonna top that, but I'm kind of like, you weren't gonna top that. And I think you knew that from, like, everyone was being like, this is the second time in a year that Okada has had to go on after Kenny, like, in a situation like this where it's like, that's an all-time, that's match of the year. So I think that, like, it's like some episodes or some seasons of TV end on a dark note, and those can be some of the sexiest season finales of all. I think it would have been okay for Kenny to lose at the end of Forbidden Door with the crowd in that condition.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. They're all amazing wrestlers. Just as you said, Leah, not to blow up your spot, but pretty fucked out after Omega Ospreay.
Honestly, I was in the bed with a cigarette being like, Jesus Christ. And those guys were still going. It's like, no, we're done.
It's over. You know the way it ends. Okay, so let's jump back to the beginning of Forbidden Door, which opened with MJF and Tanahashi. It was funny. You know, it's like, not that it wasn't a bad match, I don't think. We can get into that. I could not remember which of them. I was like, one of them had the had a belt that the other was challenging for, and so the one who had the belt won. I couldn't remember who had the belt and who won. But it was MJF has our belt, and he did win the match. Any thoughts about what went on here?
I feel like there were so many people in advance of this match being like, Tanahashi is broken. He's a broken man.
Yeah.
He is a broken shell of who he used to be. Everyone should just send him down the rainbow road.
He's there like, can you believe that he's younger than all these other people who are not as broken as he is?
Different people get broken at different times. It's okay.
Their bodies are different.
Some of us get shingles when we're in our 30s. Is that
We'll just let you guys guess, you on the podcast listeners, which of us has shingles this week?
I don't think you're going to get there, but.
But regardless of the fact that apparently Tanahashi's a senior dog, I thought this was like really, like, I don't know, like, it wasn't like a athletic match. Like, it wasn't like I was like, oh, these are spots. But like, MJF did like a really good job of like doing this thing where like, he just kept being so fucking annoying. And Tanahashi just kept being like, I want to get my hands around your throat and kill you. I just want to kill you. You're so annoying. And that's a fun match.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought MJF was super fun in it. Like, I have very few memories of this match overall. And I did think the Dynamite Diamond Ring cheating is just like getting a little old as an ending. But like, overall, it was totally fine.
I thought it was fun. And it was like, it made more sense than other times that have had a fuck finish to me. I was just like, yeah, Tanahashi is the ace of New Japan. I know the term.
I've heard that.
He's the ace of New Japan. So I get it. You're not trying to beat him clean just because he's old and his knees are broken. Like, so I thought it was fine. I liked it fine. I liked it totally fine. And I think Tanahashi, his body and his knees may be broken according to the IWC, but his body remains beautiful to me.
He's beautiful.
And his sweet high ponytail. And I said, you're on the cover of a Babysitter's Club novel. I kiss you on your mouth.
Yeah. New Japan sent us so many hunks. It was
so
just
many
like
hunks.
Hunk City, after baby. Hunk after hunk.
Oh my God.
Sonata, my God. Yeah.
It's so funny that it's like Sonata is such a hunk, but were you saying this, Leah, where you were just like, I don't think he wants to be famous in America?
No, the One Nation Radio guys were like, Sonata has some ability where like he's very famous in Japan, but every time he comes to America, people are just like, like he doesn't penetrate. He doesn't like put an imprint on the culture. He's just like, all right, I gotta go.
Who was it? Was this on One Nation Radio? Also, someone was like, there was one of the Japanese wrestlers on this show who like, he said, oh yeah, I was WWE champion. And they were like, you were always champion.
Who was it?
Kojima, that was so fucking funny. Yeah, he was like, I was a WWE champion. And they were like, you were a Ring of Honor champion. And he was like,
he said, no, but
I was like, in America. So it's like,
it was the King of America.
Yeah, I was King of America. I had a belt in America.
You're still the King of America.
So funny. We have to start listening to that podcast regularly. Yeah,
we're getting into it. That's it's an official recommendation. Okay, so then on Dynamite this week, we had a little comedy setup where Adam Cole was getting interviewed about his forced get-along shirt tag team situation with MJF. MJF rolled up in his car and was like, we got to hang out. Like, he was like, it's amazing that this is actually good. Like, you aren't, like, good at doing wrestling on your own. I don't remember what he said. He said something about getting sick, but because Adam Cole was sick and he was vomiting and couldn't come to Forbidden Door. But anyway, he was like, let's hang out so we can bond as a tag team. And Adam Cole was like, okay, I gotta go catch up with some people, and then fine, we can do that. The acting in this little segment, mwah, beautiful. Kiss on the mouth. Adam Cole, so funny, pinching the bridge of his nose, being like, do not touch my arm again. What did we say about boundaries? I told you I have to go see some people, and then we can hang out. So funny.
So funny. And I don't, like, it's so funny to me that, like, this is working so well. When it's like, MJF is not that different from Jericho in like the place that they occupy. But for some reason, Adam Cole is just like engaging so much more and so much more comedically with MJF.
Yeah.
It's so interesting, like, who has chemistry and who doesn't, because this was, like, immediately, like, electric, and it was interesting, whereas, like, both MJF and Adam Cole have had interactions with other people where I was just like, that was nothing. So, but they were both super funny and enjoyable.
I think that MJF and, or not MJF, Adam Cole and Jericho, when they were doing their feud, neither of them was really being funny. Like, they were both being like, this is really serious, which is... has its own place. Like, not everything should be funny, but MJF and Adam Cole, like, are engaging on the rat boy level, where one of them is like, I'm a good behaving rat boy now, but you are pushing me to the limit, and one of them is like, I'm a bad rat boy and I always have been, and I love pushing people to the limit. So that is really, really working for me. And then we had a little segment later on in Dynamite where Roderick Strong came up to Adam Cole back in the parking lot and was like, don't trust MJF, you need to not trust MJF. And Adam Cole was like, obviously I don't fucking trust MJF, I'm not a moron, like, yeah, I'm just fucking getting by to get by. And Roderick Strong was like, oh, okay, well, but what if he watches, like, Dynamite back? Which was the first time anyone has ever, not the first time, but, like, it so rarely comes up that people are like, this is a televised program, someone could watch this and see it. I loved the way they did this, where Adam Cole was just like, I'm sorry, MJF is gonna watch this back? Buddy, I don't think so. And it's like, you could bring that back and have him watch it back and it would work great. You could have him never watch it back and it would work fine. Like, this was the lampshade looks beautiful.
Yeah, perfect. But it did kill me, because at the end of that segment, Roddy is standing there watching Adam Cole drive away. What were we supposed to understand that Roddy Strong felt in that moment? Because to me, his face was like, I know that you're going to end up with MJF, because you always date assholes. And I wish that you would see me. I wish you wanted
a nice guy.
I'm a nice guy. I've always been up by your side. I stand here every day. I'm here, but you never see me. You always date these assholes. And you're looking in my eyes and you're telling me, oh, I'm not going to trust MJF. Of course I'm not going to trust MJF. You're gonna. I know I'm gonna pick you up at 3 a.m. Right. from his apartment. Mm-hmm. When he throws you out, and you're going to be crying in my car, and I'm going to say, I told you not to trust him. I see this coming. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then that'll be after 6 months where you blow me off every time we make plans. Yeah. Because you're so busy with your mean new boyfriend, MJF. No, absolutely. Yeah. When you said this to us, Leah, I had not processed it that way. You said it. I was shocked by how immediately I was like, my God, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
That is exactly it's totally what happened. And you said, not to speak for you, but you said it's that Roderick Strong 3 months ago told Adam Cole, I'm in love with you. And Adam Cole was like, you're my best friend.
And that our friendship is really important. I don't want to lose that.
And now Roderick Strong is just having to be like, you're my best friend too, but I can't believe that you're going to date this guy instead of me.
Mm-hmm. This guy who's calling me a generic white guy right to my face.
And that's the first thing that someone has said about Roderick Strong that made me be like, now I'm interested. Hang on a second. This generic white man, as MJF said, now I'm listening. I'm paying attention now.
It's so funny how much that line popped so many people, because it's so true. And unfortunately, Roderick Strong does look like not even a generic Hugh Jackman, but like straight up dollar store Hugh Jackman.
Yeah. Just. I mean, God bless. Do you guys have any, like, kind of overall broader thoughts on, you know what? I'm actually going to kick this. Let's get into the OC part and then we'll talk about it there. Is that okay?
Okay. Perfect.
Okay. So Orange Cassidy retained his All Atlantic title at Forbidden Door. So he was fighting Shibata, Zack Sabre Jr., and Daniel Garcia. So Garcia
Why
ate.
Why did you just say Junior?
Junior. In between Shibata and Garcia.
Zack Sabre Jr.
Zack Sabre Jr. I'm just drunk, okay? It's rude to call it out. Zack Sabre Jr. and Daniel Garcia, who ate the pin. So Daniel Garcia cut a little pre-Dynamite promo in which he was like, I was going to win. I should have won. I got to fight OC again. But this time with my father's 2.0. And then there was this question of, like, who was going to fight with Orange Cassidy. This was very funny. I can't remember who was doing the interview. It was either Alex Marvez or Tony Schiavone, who was like, well, OC does have friends. This is the first time hearing about it. The best friends. But they're in Europe right now, which they are. They went to Paris.
France. Yeah.
Paris, France. to shill for the video game, but it was so funny to just be like, his best friends are in Europe, unfortunately.
They're in Europe. Did you see that Trent like took a picture at the Eiffel Tower by himself because Dustin's flight got canceled, and then he took a picture by the Eiffel Tower with Dustin when Dustin finally got there.
Oh,
like,
I didn't see the one. I gotta go look at the one with Dustin. That's it's so sweet. Yeah. Wow, I do love them. You'll be shocked to hear. So then Daniel Garcia was running through like a list of men. He's just being like, Orange Cassidy, you have no friends. Yuta won't fight with you. It's like, yeah, his estranged son isn't going to fight with him. And then he said, Adam Cole won't fight with you. It's like, he just fought with Adam Cole 2 months ago. Like, and did we say it was crazy at the time? Yes. But in the most recent canon of wrestling, they're on pretty good terms, actually.
OC's kind of a slut for fighting with everyone in the company for no reason.
There's
he'll tag
no
team
he
with anybody.
Fight with. Yeah. But so Orange Cassidy ended up teaming with Keith Lee and Vikingo. And that is what happened. And it was totally fun to watch. Did it make sense? Keith Lee, he has fought with recently.
I guess. Yes.
It's so crazy. It's
when
like
he was fighting with Adam
bag.
Cole, wasn't it? Wasn't it Adam week. Cole, Keith Lee, and... This makes no sense.
Yeah, and who
another
was
man. Could have been Bandido. Could have been could a have different been. Man than that.
Mm-hmm.
Could have been any man.
OC it's has like- been in his own blind eliminator tournament where they just draw names out of a hat for him for like 6 months.
He's it's friends so with whoever we need him to be friends with.
Right. It's so unfortunate that he's like... really good, like he just has so much charisma in a very like low-key way that like it really you really just can throw him together with anybody and it would be fine. Like, don't you get the sense that like literally anybody, like you could make him tag team with literally anyone in this company and it would be fine?
It feels like whenever Tony panics, he's just like, okay, we're gonna get OC in there, and like who else do I need on the show, like whatever. And OC
doesn't
just
matter
like,
yeah
sure fine.
And it was like it ended up being a good match, but I am ready to see Orange Cassidy fighting for a reason and have that reason not be the belt.
Yeah,
I know.
And it'll be interesting to see what they do when they take the belt off him, because the belt has been driving the narrative so much. It's like, you have the belt, so he has to keep fighting, but his body is breaking down, which is its own storyline, and I think they've done a pretty good job with it. Like, it's not that I don't like it.
No, it's a good, I can't complain storyline. About it,
But when the belt goes away, then we have to be ready to have a different story for OC that is about... like, you know, what it means to him to be beltless. And he has, I can't, actually, I shouldn't say it. I can't tell if he's damaged his relationships. I'm not sure about that.
Like, honestly, like this storyline with the belt, it would be so much better if they did just consistently be like, now he started caring about the belt so much and he's like mad and he snatches it away and he is like neglecting his friends, or, you know, like there how are these like little bits of tension that never go anywhere. Like, that would make it.
And it would be, if they wanted to do that storyline, it would be very easy to do with almost no diff. Like, you could do almost everything the same, except that it would be like Orange Cassidy being like, I assume best friends will fight with me. And then being like, dude, we're going to France. We've told you that 50 times. Like, you have to find someone else to fight with you. And that's like a 30-second promo that would totally change the shape of this narrative and be like, your friends are fed up with you because you are ignoring them because you're so obsessed with your belt. But I don't know if they're doing that. Let's quickly talk about... so we're doing this tag team eliminator tournament, which is random tag teams. So we have MJF and Adam Cole got picked out of a hat, and they're a tag team. Now, they scheduled... I think this is for Dynamite next week. We have a tag team match that's Orange Cassidy and Darby got picked out of a hat. Okay.
Yeah.
Grow up.
Sure.
And Keith Lee and Swerve. Orange Cassidy and Darby and Keith Lee and Swerve... both got picked out of a hat. I suspend my disbelief every single week, and I enjoy doing it because I like a good narrative more than I like realism, stark realism. This is pushing me to my limits. Okay?
It's fucking insane.
This is a little too much.
It is. Yeah. I wish that, like, I honestly really like the idea of the blind eliminator tournament. Like, it's a very funny premise. It's great. But it's like they didn't set it up very well. It's just kind of happening and everyone's like, oh, so this is like random. Like, I don't know. It just would be a little better if they were doing it like a little more coherently.
I think that they should have been a little clearer when they were setting it up. But I didn't need that much setup to buy in, because I agree. I'm just like, it's such a funny premise. I just think that you need to find a slightly more interesting way to get people who are connected and who are going to have interesting dynamics involved in the same match. Because I do not think that it is reasonable to be pairing OC and Darby up for months with no explanation of why they're friends and then be like, and then they just got picked out of a hat together. So they're in.
The, I know.
It's not appropriate.
You could have picked them out of a hat and then had them team a bunch of times. Oh, like that would have made sense.
And that makes too much sense.
It should be OC. Like it should be like OC Roosh or something. You know what I mean? Like, somebody that's like something random. So, and I saw somebody on the internet say, I might have been Trevor Dame, said it is absolutely bananas that we are getting Keith Lee and Swerve teaming again before we ever get a Keith Lee and Swerve singles match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Well, they haven't fought each other yet. Isn't that not crazy?
It's
and that's
totally
another storyline that has been like all over the place too, where it's like you just can't coherently and consistently keep things like in a line story-wise.
Yeah. And I think that with a setup like this, you want to have a pretty good balance, in my opinion, of pairs that it's like it might spark a storyline going forward, but it doesn't play on an existing storyline. And people are like, that's a crazy pairing. I'm obsessed with this. You want to have some of those. And then because it's fiction, you get a couple of pairings that are like, oh, shit, I'm working with him on the class project.
Yeah. Right.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Fuck no.
Yeah.
But you need a combination. And right now we don't have a combination at all. Every single pairing is like, those people would be paired together. Like for either because they really like each other or because they really don't. Mm-hmm. But you can't narratively, you can't get away with that because you want the some pairings that are just like, fuck, that's a wild card. It's insane. I'm obsessed with it.
Right.
Yeah. And if you just want to do matches like this, like just be like, oh, the hand of God, Tony Khan is like fucking with you guys and he's decreed you have to do this, you know? Like,
yeah, that's so true. Yeah. Like,
I will say
Tony for that.
I will say that I am kind of over people on Twitter being like, I don't want to see this because people in 1980 did this a lot. And I'm like, well, that was a long time ago.
What happened in 1980?
Like, apparently, like, this was, like, a big thing. And, like, doing these kind of, like, weird matchups was, like, a big thing. And, like,
I don't give a shit about that. Yeah, no.
No, me neither. But, like, people are like,
this could be really fun.
But, like, don't you think it's crazy for people to be like, this was overused in 1980, so I don't know why we're doing this now. And I'm like, that was a long time
ago. Lots of stuff was overused in 1980 that we love now. So,
you know what? Take a break.
It's actually been 40 years since 1980 to get into it, but it's been quite a while.
Okay, well, don't say that to me. It's been 20 years.
I know. That's how I feel, too. But we have to be honest with our podcast listeners. It's been quite a while.
That is what we're known for, being
honesty.
Honest.
Yeah, we're known for honesty. Let's move on and talk about Jungle Boy. How does that sound?
Love Jungle Boy.
Yeah.
Love Jungle Boy. So Jungle Boy fought Sonata at the pay-per-view and lost, and it absolutely set him completely over the edge. So as he and his best friend, his only friend and his best friend Hook, were exiting the ring and heading towards the tunnels, JB had a dissociative episode, attacked Hook, and then looked around, so knocked him out flat on the ground, and then looked around at the booing crowd like, why are you booing me? What did I do that I didn't have to do? I had to do it. Which I loved. I loved that his vibe was just like, I had no choice but to attack Hook right now. I don't know that this was the moment that made the most sense to attack Hook, but
it made me laugh so hard because my cat, like one of my cats is very long haired and she gets mad sometimes and I pin her down and I like fix it and she gets so mad at me, but she knows she's not allowed to attack me. So she'll like go, like she'll jump off the couch and go find her sister and then punch her sister in the face because she's so mad at me but she can't do anything about it. And that's how it felt where Jungle Boy was like, I can't do anything about Sonata, but I sure can punch Hook.
Yeah,
that is a good point.
That's very true.
I think that I wish that there had been a little bit more of a vibe of Hook being like, you'll get him next time, and Jungle Boy being like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah,
but you're not gonna get that with Hook, so you know, it is what it is.
Honestly, like Taz did as much to sell this as anybody. Totally. Like, he looked devastated. Like, the face acting that Taz was doing,
Taz,
like,
killed it. Yeah,
perfect.
Taz has been on, like, we didn't bring it up, but like, in the Daniel Garcia match when he was like, Daniel Garcia is 2.0 sons, but not biologically.
Not by DNA, he said. Not by DNA. It's a gimmick.
Okay, Taz. Amazing.
You're so perfect, funny. Man. You're perfect.
You've done nothing wrong.
Another commentary called someone short, and he was like, let's not use the S word. I was like, Taz, I love you.
So Taz was visibly shaken, quickly left to go, like, help Hook backstage. Then on Dynamite this week, JB came out and cut his first ever heel promo to kind of try and explain himself a little bit. So any overall thoughts on, like, how this turn worked? We got into that a little, how the heel promo worked.
I think that people are so mean to Jungle Boy.
They really are.
I know.
People refuse to grade him on his own progress. And instead, yeah, they're like they're judging him against MJF or like people that like are established good talking heels. And it's like,
yeah,
you cannot, like, I don't, like, I guess it's like, it's fine to do a little bit to be like, you know, like he still has far to go. But like, if you judge him against this point last year, if anyone said to us, Jungle Boy is going to give a heel promo where he works really hard to convince you you're a heel, don't you think that you would be like, and I would never believe it?
Honestly, like, when he came out this podcast, time,
we've been like, JB can't play a heel. He's just a little baby boy.
When he came out this time, I was like, yeah, let's see how this will go, because I didn't think I would buy it at all. And he did great. It's crazy how every time he does anything, people are like, he's not a star. And it's like, he's doing really well.
So,
like, what are you
to
talking
him.
About?
It is really wild to me, especially because it's like when I watch him wrestle, like sometimes I forget about, because he has kind of an unassuming presence a little bit. But then you watch him in a match and you're just like, oh, he fucks. Like, he's so good. And then, like, this promo.
And it's not like he gets crazy amounts of time either. It's not like, he gets like a normal mid-card amount.
It's a normal amount of time. And then this promo, like, clearly it was like pretty over the top, like melodramatic CW villain style. Like, he came out, he was like, what do villains do? They wear sunglasses. So I put my sunglasses on. Like, it was very funny that he was like, I dress like Christian, my mean mentor. but then I was like, I thought he did kind of a good job for who he is. And do I think that the story fully adds up? No. But I had a little revelation a couple weeks ago where I had been saying, like, it's so crazy that he keeps calling Hook his best friend and that they're not best friends. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, he is deeply emotionally damaged because all of his friends and father figures turned on him and he has no one in his life. So of course he's glommed on to someone and been like, you're my best friend. The only thing that's weird about the storyline is that Hook is acting like they're best friends instead of being like, I started hanging out with this guy a couple weeks ago and he's being like pretty intense, but I don't really know how to engage with that. So I just like, keep ignoring it.
He said, I love you on the first date. So that's pretty weird.
It was an okay date. So I don't know that I want to like throw him out, but you know,
I wish Hook would talk, because it's honestly, it would be so fucking funny to have him, like, because he's like real life friends with like Anthony Bowens or whatever. Oh, yeah. So like, if you did like a backstage segment where he's like sitting with Anthony Bowens and be like, I don't know, man, like the sex is really good. Like, he's crazy.
Like, he's coming on really strong.
It's like, and Anthony Bowens is being like dangerous strong, and Hook is like, no, I'm not that worried. Like, I could take him, but it's not normal. I'll tell you that. So that kind of through line of Jungle Boy being like, everybody turned on me, so now I turn on everybody. I was like, it's not how I would do it. I would do some stuff differently. But the overall shape of it is okay. Like, I think he's doing a fairly credible job of being mean. And he has a little bit of an energy of like, I've been pushed to my edge. So I'm like completely retreating into myself. And I'm just going to be so fucking mean because I don't know what to do with these feelings. I don't know where to put them.
Yeah. And they like have set it up okay. Like, there have been these like over the past few weeks or months or whatever, like little bits where you're like, oh, JB, he might be turning heel here.
Totally.
So like, they did lay some groundwork. Like, it was a weird moment for it, I think. But like, overall, I think the storyline is working pretty well.
It's strange. I think people are weirdly hard on him, and he somehow provoked a lot of discourse by saying, like, I'm banging the hottest bitch in this company, which we're on record. Like, I don't think that they should be talking about bitches as much as they are, like, almost ever. But there have been a million people at this company, faces, who mm-hmm. have had lines where it's just like, oh, you're a fucking bitch, or, you know, something like mm-hmm. that. I haven't said fucking on TBS, but and they haven't somehow provoked this much discourse as Jungle Boy being like, I'm a bad guy now, so I'm gonna say a bad guy thing again. Yeah. I'm not saying that we should be talking about bitches, because I do think it is, like, kind of a cheap heat regressive move, mm-hmm. but I'm just like, is Jungle Boys where you want to start that discourse, and you don't want to go back and, like, start it in earnest with, like, Action Andretti? Like, no offense, Action, but, right. like, there that are one was a lot way of worse. Other places that we could put this, and I haven't seen you put it there, so it's a little weird that now
it's
you're
always
really
Jungle Boy.
Concerned yeah. about Jungle yeah. Boy.
Yeah. yeah. And it was, like, more startling from him, because he's been a nice boy this whole time. It's but true. That was, like, made it affect. I mean, I didn't love it either, but it's like, I'm not, whatever.
Yeah.
It's the least of my
least
problems.
Of my concerns. So many things are the least of my concerns, really. Do you guys want to quickly end up just by touching on Adult Lovers?
Yeah. yeah. Although, can we say when Jungle Boy raced out and then dove headfirst into a car, it was so funny, and they so executed perfect. It so well, like the camera angle and everything.
It was great.
Like,
yeah,
great work, everybody.
And he was doing real, like, Looney Tunes cartoon, like, oh yeah. I gotta go, I'm getting pursued. Great. Loved
Beautiful.
It
so funny.
Yeah. Okay, in the Adult Lovers world, Sting and Jericho, so they got the PPV death spot, which was the breather between Omega Osprey and Danielson Okada. I don't think any of us could recount, like, what happened in this match.
No.
I thought it was fine and fun at the time, but again, I was, like, panting on the couch, being like, I've got I'm overheated.
I was like taking the dog out because she needed to go out for, like, a half hour, and I kept thinking the Osprey Omega match was about to end, and then it wouldn't end. So Mm-mm. it was the situation.
Yeah. So then they didn't run it back exactly, but they did Darby Sting versus Jericho Sammy on Dynamite this week, and they did this spot where Sting, like, Darby was going to do this crazy jump, but then Sting was like, no, I want to do it. And I thought he killed himself. I fully thought he killed himself.
He jumped off a ladder onto a table.
It was so
and he
far.
I'm pretty yeah. sure that he smacked his face against Sammy's knee, because I watched the GIF, like, multiple times. I think his face went right into Sammy's knee.
Yeah.
And well, so
I think he knocked out a main tooth.
From the main angle, too, it looked like he didn't really hit the table very well. Like, it looked to me like he'd hit it very weird. Mm-hmm. Although then they switched to, like, an overhead shot, and I was like, oh, he did hit it, like, more squarely. Although I think he did hit his mouth was very bloody. But it was, like, not as bad as it looked at first. But, I mean, my God.
It was a relieving moment in this match where, like, that happened, and the match was kind of continuing. And you were like, is Sting alive? Like, is he okay over there? And then eventually he came into the ring behind Jericho with his bloody mouth. And I was like, oh, thank God. He's yeah. still in the match. He's fine. I can come back to myself. But I thought that this match was fun and fine. But the thing that the only thing I really wanted to bring up was this promo that Jericho got on Dynamite, where it was, like, basically his turn to be like, I haven't had enough of you, Sting. I need you in my bed again. And there was this moment in the promo where he's just being like, Sting, you get back to me. Like, we have to meet in the ring one more time. And then he just says something like, isn't that right, Sammy? And Sammy is standing next to him. And Sammy literally says nothing. He's just like, uh-huh. Like, where I'm just like, Sammy is like, Dad, if you try to talk to me about your sex life for one more minute, I swear to God, I'm out of here. And I loved personally I for love me it. I loved
it's
that
beautiful.
I thought the Dynamite match was definitely better than the pay-per-view match, although again mm-hmm. I was not in a place that I could receive the pay-per-view match, but like the Dynamite match just seemed like it was much more interactive. Like, the two of them yeah. were just like Jericho just kept going to find Sting and just being mm-hmm. like I need to get my hands on you.
The amount of sexual chemistry these two guys are bringing, it's just unexpected.
I mean, they've been bottling it up for years and years. not touching each other, not getting near each other, and then suddenly
looking at each other across the locker room, thinking, oh my God, someday
when we're in our together
50s and 60s.
Do you guys like my question here? This is my only discussion question, is what date should Sting and Jericho go on? Did you guys like that? Do you have a thought about that?
I like your romantic honeymoon on the Jericho cruise. Should we go on the Jericho cruise next year?
Sometimes I'm worried that we're like really close to doing it. Like, I'm just like, it's not a no from me.
It's not a no. I did look at those cabins pretty intensely one year.
I would love to tell people that that's where I'm going.
The Chris Jericho cruise. I looked at it like in 2021 too, and I was like, I would get COVID on the Chris Jericho cruise.
Yeah. I would get COVID. For sure. And I also just keep thinking about like someone saying to Trent, like, are you excited to go on the Jericho cruise? And he was like, no, the whole boat smells really bad. Because it's a lot of unwashed wrestling men.
When I looked at the staterooms, it's like you can fit 4 people in them, and it's obviously a lot more affordable, but it's like, you know, a cruise stateroom, so they're tiny. So it's basically like you're all sleeping like right next to each other. I was just like picturing, you know, the 4 of us here just like cramming into a little stateroom.
So you think we'll get Marjorie to come to there?
I think Marjorie will
get her to come to the Jericho,
cruise.
She's wishing that we would take her on the Jericho cruise.
Get in a boat with hundreds of wrestling fans.
I'm is the Jericho cruise kind of a romantic honeymoon for many of the fans? Cramming into those staterooms, sleeping,
you could learn a lot about
in these
yourself.
Tight little beds together.
I did have an answer, by the way, for what date Sting and Jericho should go down. Don't you think that they a little bit could do like a walk around on like a historical reenactment village?
You know? I'm just picturing them like Sting's in the face paint, obviously, and like in their gear, you know.
Yeah, Jericho's wearing like 6-inch heels, and they're like walking
the spike
through.
Jacket.
Okay,
and like it's like a Revolutionary War reenactment
because the men were wearing heels back then.
Yeah,
Jericho. Yay. If Jericho was in costume, I'm like a jungle cat right now. Like I'm prowling closer to the mic.
Honestly,
I'm like
Jericho
with
so like a
true
ponytail and Revolutionary War.
I'm saying like.
Gear,
yes, gear, and clothes, he's like garb. Pretending that he. Well, I'm worried that he'd be a Confederate, but
we're so in the Revolutionary times.
War
that's
is dangerous. Oh, you're right. We're back. Not Civil War. Okay, great. I'm so sorry. I just got so scared that I couldn't even really hear what you were saying. Like I was like, he is a Confederate, but you're right. We're in the Revolutionary War, so he's on the right side because he can't. Even though he's Canadian, like the Canadians can't. Some of them support the Queen, but I think he could get on our side about like we're not into the British, and he is like pretending to be on the like a General Washington kind of battle commander.
He'd love to get some breeches on.
Yeah. Oh my God. And I can see now that is his next reinvention. Wizard is out. Revolutionary War cosplayer is in.
He came out in Revolutionary War cosplay. Oh my God. The delight that I would feel.
But you know where else he could go? Where it's not as strict that the costume be historically accurate. Head to the
Renaissance Fair.
Am I right? Head to the Ren Fair, Chris Jericho and Sting.
They're
just
horny there. Yeah.
They're very horny there. They're fucking like crazy. Mm-hmm. Some of them are pretending to be Star Trek time travelers.
I love thinking about like a Ren Fair situation where you're like excited to do like this crazy summer thing with your friends. Mm-hmm. But like there's this one guy who like is one of the knights that does jousting that's like too like intense, and he just
and is that Christopher Jericho? Who do you think that Sting is at the Ren Fair though? Like, oh, you know what, Sting could play kind of a like a Monty Python-esque knight who won't take his helmet off. Like I could see Sting getting into that where he's bringing a little comedy to it, but it's a silent comedy. And then Chris Jericho could be a really full of himself kind of like prince knight figure. And they could fight, and who knows where that would lead.
And then sometimes they go back to the inn at the end of the day, and there's not enough beds.
There's not enough beds at that classic Renfair Inn. Mm. There aren't sufficient beds.
You've got a straw mattress, you know, and there's just one.
And you know
can do
they,
some traditional
you know
bundling.
In olden times, they called that a pallet, a beautiful straw pallet. And who knows what they do on that pallet?
I think that's so
between them.
We're like really breaking ground as a wrestling podcast.
I'm worried.
I don't think you don't hear this on Meltzer's podcast.
No, yeah. It doesn't come up. I'm so worried that I would go on a Renaissance Fair cruise.
That's an interesting combination of things.
Allie, like a Renfair cruise, like headed up by Chris Jericho. Like he's like,
yeah,
he just like in the center of the boat where he usually has the ring, he just instead has like that's the throne. That's the scene that you're supposed to watch for that night.
Oh my God. And I just
Chris
thought
Chris Jericho
okay.
had like a medieval times Renaissance
yes.
fair cruise. Oh
yes,
my God.
Yes. Yes. And Chris Jericho is the king of the cruise and he orders the different wrestlers. He says, fight for my entertainment, jesters. And then there is no ring, but there's just kind of an open space where the men explore each other's bodies at the Renfair. And
yeah.
I'm drinking mead and it's too sweet. So sweet.
Okay.
Too sweet.
Hello. Jericho is a businessman. And he doesn't give a single shit as long as he makes money.
Yes.
I think if we pitched this to him and we were like, there is a demographic that would
the cruise is
gonna
be like
for this.
The three of us, our 10 listeners, that boat will be small but full and they'll be excited.
I think we could get other people to come.
Well, because when you think about how many people are going on the Jericho cruise, do we know how many people, like 2,000 or something?
I don't know.
Probably surely 2,000 people would go to a medieval times cruise where Chris Jericho plays the king.
And men fuck in the middle of the boat?
I did not say they fuck. I just said that they explore each other's that's what wrestling is, Leah. It's not, no one puts anything in necessarily unless they want to. They can choose to if they want to.
Do you know the next Jericho cruise is in January and it is sold out already?
What the
Shut
fuck?
Up.
What the we fuck?
We can't
you
go
can
to
join
2025.
The waiting list. We can't go until 2025.
Should we join the waiting list?
I mean, I could click the button.
I don't know.
Well, Marjorie, clear your schedule for 2025.
If we get to him now, and we say it's two cruises a year, one is for the normal wrestling fans, one is for the real fucking weirdos. And they're going
to want to watch the men explore each other's bodies
each other's
in front of Chris Jericho on a throne.
In a medieval setting. And
we're
actually
eating chickens with our hands.
Let me say something to you now.
Yeah.
In a medieval setting, if it smells bad on that cruise, that's historical accuracy. So, Trent, you would want to be there. If it was historically accurate, you wouldn't mind if it was stinky.
They haven't even announced a lineup for this cruise, and it's sold out. That's crazy.
I think Trent would be more interested anyways if he got to be a knight.
Oh, my God.
Trent would be into it, yeah.
Okay, he would love. I really think that he would love if he got to play a character at the Renfair. He would love it. Dustin would hate it, but we'll make him do it because we have the power in this scenario. Orange Cassidy would be a really good silent jester.
Yeah. And like, but I think like he wouldn't seem like he had invested a lot into it, but secretly when you start to pay attention, you're like, oh, weirdly, like all of your costume is incredibly historically accurate. And you've clearly done
like
a lot of research.
Love this.
Court jester is kind of his wheelhouse.
Absolutely. And if he's kind of capering around at Chris Jericho's feet and
doing little dances.
Wow, this isn't nothing, and in fact it's the most something thing we've ever discussed.
The cruise capacity is like 2,000 people, so
all right, girls, what do you say that we stop recording and start building a deck to send Chris Jericho? Oh,
I literally thought you were in like Noah's Ark territory when you were like, we built the boat. Let's get off this call and let's go to the hardware store. Let's go to Home Depot. We get the boards.
We build the deck of the boat. If you build it, they will
come. Now, Field of Dreams with a wrestling ring is also not nothing. And we'll come back to that at a later date. Okay, let's come back to that. I think that's got to be the end of the episode, unless I missed something. Did I miss anything, ladies?
You didn't, but like, imagine if we had a transition right now. And we were like, okay.
Anyway, so.
So, Kojima.
Really beyond my capacity at the moment, but I would try if I had to. Do I have to?
No.
No.
Thank and God.
In that case, I've been Allie.
I've been Anne.
And I've been Leah.
It's always Tunnel Talk. Our show is produced by Marjorie Voinovich. Our theme is by Chris Corkin. You can find us on Twitter at Tunnel Talk Pod, Tumblr at Tunnel Talk Pod, via email at tunneltalkpod@gmail.com. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, and come back next week.